Hi, welcome to another StanLib podcast. My name is Kevin Lings. I'm the chief economist at StanLib. And today we're joined by Marius Oberholzer, who's the franchise head for the multi-strat investment team. And what we want to discuss with Marius today is how some of the big macroeconomic themes are impacting financial markets. More specifically, if we look at some of the key developments around interest rates, around some of the geopolitics, and potentially around a better prospect for South Africa's economy over the next 2 years, how are investors factoring those into their investment decision making? And so I'll be posing Marius a couple of questions just to gain his insight into how he's dealing with some of these big macroeconomic events. So Marius, in terms of our discussion, I think let's start off with interest rates. From our perspective, obviously interest rates likely to remain elevated for a considerable time. Obviously, there's a discussion in the short term about whether interest rates need to go higher, but there's no doubt that interest rates are going to remain at these levels well into next year. So from your perspective, how do you cope with persistent high interest rate when it comes to managing your portfolio?
So Kevin, thanks. I think the big question that we need to ask ourselves is first of all, is why are interest rates high? The second thing that as portfolio managers we'd ask ourselves is what is the market expecting interest rates to be, or you know, either in the short run or in the longer run. Because for us, it's really, especially as it relates to interest rate bearing securities, the big moves happen when they're unexpected. When they expected, the market doesn't necessarily react too much. So the first thing is around the expectations. And in the short run, I think, you know, even somebody with your credibility and research capability, you're struggling to form a view in the short run about what rates are going to do. The upward pressure on yields is unprecedented, though. I think we now reached that realm. And clearly the concern that we've had, and I'm sure many others in the industry, is around what that does to other assets around the world, be it venture capital, private equity markets themselves, currency markets, and especially, of course, in a highly indebted world. This leads to some concerns that have been in place for a decade. And obviously increasingly relevant. So for us, it's around the shorter term moves, what's expected and what's been priced. The second thing around the persistent higher rates. So if we assume that rates are high, but they're not necessarily moving anywhere, then I think we ask ourselves the question around what is growth doing? And when we look at growth, it's not just economic growth, it's earnings growth. What are margins doing? What's the flow of capital doing? All of those sorts of things that come through in our tactical asset allocation process, which is just one component contains economics. And really, I think the opportunity post-2022 is that potentially growth will remain reasonably high when interest rates are high. So we're all assuming that rates are staying high just because of inflation, but it could be growth coming through, driven by factors like the Inflation Reduction Act in the US, the CHIP Act, and a reshoring process. So if rates are staying high, both because inflation is not falling, but also because growth is staying high, economic earnings, reinvestment, etc., then I think equities can hold ground. We don't see an enormous amount of upside. The flip side then becomes, well, credit looks okay. All-in yields in high-yield credit, for instance, in the US around 8%, in Asia, high double digits. TIPS for the first time in my career over 25 years become interesting. And of course, if you think that there's a falling growth rate and higher inflation, you need to start looking at real assets. So we don't have a lot of time. So hopefully that's a quick run through.
In terms of the geopolitics, there's obviously a lot going on around the world. We saw the Russia-Ukraine crisis flare up, and that certainly had an impact on market. And to some extent, that still persists. We've got obviously the Gaza conflict, which is likely to escalate further. And then we've got these tensions that have increased between the China and the United States, and a general fragmentation of the global economy, if you like, around political lines. In terms of your portfolio, when you see an increase in some sort of event, like, for instance, the Israel-Gaza event, How do you cope with that in your portfolio? Do you make initial adjustments? Do you wait for the event to unfold and see how things are developing? What is your approach to accommodating or adjusting for geopolitical events?
So, Kev, the first bit as it relates to geopolitical events, and you and I have talked about this over many years, is that there's really no edge, or certainly no edge from where we're sitting in terms of analyzing geopolitical events. But what we do want to get is, again, similar to, you know, what are the expectations that people are expecting versus what actually transpires, is we want to get a direction of travel. We clearly want to get ourselves up to speed with as quickly as possible with what the moving parts are, and hopefully be as unbiased around those moving parts as possible. So, for instance, we wrote a piece on the 10th of October, just post the flare up in Israel, around, you know, this is what we think could potentially happen. No edge, but again, what we're looking to happen. And similar to our tactical asset allocation process and thinking around the scenario world and the way the world might move over time, is the big thing for us is really where are the spillover events potentially going to take place, and then what will those impacts be on market prices, investors' behavior, policymaker decisions, etc. And so as we look at the, you know, the Russia situation is a little bit easier. There was a much more of a lead time into that. We could pick it up through some of our processes and things that we've built, where we picked up the buildup of troops and we de-risk portfolios into that and protected portfolios against the inevitable short-term move of a risk-off situation. The Israeli conflict gave us no chance to do that. And so we had to work out what we would do. And the market at the same time was fixated around Powell's or the announcement around the non-farm payroll at that point in time, that weekend. So for us, the big concern is a spillover into the surrounding regions of Israel. The second area that we're very worried about, which is similar thinking to the Arab Spring a few years ago, is what we would term something like a Muslim Spring. And you get these pockets of uprising in Europe, especially where there's a high degree of Islamic citizens. And we've seen some of that already. And as I'd like to phrase it, peaceful but passionate. But we are seeing that growing, and we're seeing rhetoric from people like the Saudis and the US trying to de-escalate the scenario. That's pleasing, but this, as everybody knows, is dramatic. So the impact on markets would be clearly the oil price. It's already moved. We think the geopolitical premium from the region now comes back. That at the moment, we think it's $5 in oil. We think that would grow to as much as $10 in the terms of the shape of the curve and where the supply-demand dynamics would balance out. And similarly, we're seeing a big dispersion between Brent and the light crude in terms of pricing. And that gives us some opportunities to potentially take advantage of from a portfolio perspective. But really, it hasn't paid investors to sell the news of war. Historically, it's paid them to buy the news of war in the absence of it becoming all-encompassing like a world war, and this clearly could be. And in that case, I don't know if bond yields go up or down. I know equities get hammered. We don't know what the fiscal positions would happen and what that impact would be on currencies, but you can make deductions around that. So for us, if we thought the worst-case scenario starts transpiring, we'd be in gold, oil, dollars. And I'm not quite sure if we'd be crowding into bonds, given the fiscal responses and the fragility of balance sheets from pretty much all governments around the world.
Okay, Marius, so let's finally finish off with something a little bit more positive, and that is a view on South Africa. Our feeling is that obviously the economic environment is tough at the moment and will remain tough for the next couple of months. But going forward into, let's say, 2025, potentially get eliminated entirely by the end of next year. We're optimistic that the Reserve Bank will start to cut interest rates second half of next year. We also think that the election will provide some spending boost to the economy leading up to that event and potentially shortly after that event. So we have revised up our growth expectations in South Africa for the next 2 years. Given that more positive view on South Africa, And bearing in mind where valuations are for South African assets, what is your view on how meaningful that might be in terms of investor returns?
Yeah, it's so nice to hear some talk, and from your lips to God's ears, may it materialize like that. So I think you have a slight variant perception, because your GDP growth rate that you're forecasting is around 1.8%, if I'm not mistaken. And I think important for the listeners to realize is that I know that your conviction levels, as we discuss this, is also going up around the scenario that you've highlighted to the investment teams within StanLib. So I think the first thing, and you mentioned it, the sentiment is really, really low in South Africa. And therefore, a move from, 0.5% growth or even 0% growth, it feels like zero at the moment, would be a big shift. And for us, the second derivative matters, again, as we mentioned earlier, what's expected versus what happens. And I think a shift towards those growth rates, if you're right, would feel like an economic boom almost in the short run. You mentioned SA equities being cheap. I'm not convinced that they're that cheap. We have talked previously around the derating that we thought would happen in SA equities starting in 2017. We talked about it for the first time. But I think that that's largely played out now, not completely, but has largely played out. But I think that the foreigners would like to see our energy availability. You call the energy availability factor, if I'm not mistaken. Again, if that improves, I think we could get a rush towards SA, because a lot of other places in the world are not great for investing. You mentioned China earlier in the conversation. And so I think that there could be a great opportunity from a macro perspective, and foreigners, when they're macro investors, will come for the currency, they'll come for the bonds, and then they'll come for not necessarily all of our equities, but certainly the banking stocks. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think around some of those things, our bonds are reasonably cheap. The question is, have they been priced efficiently for the potential poor outcomes from a medium-term budget perspective, a budget perspective in early 2024, and what that might look like in late 24? And my team's view, it's our own view. It's not the rest of StanLib's view or your view, but that the downgrade potential is high into 2024. And therefore, that cost of capital has to come into your thinking. But overall, that growth dynamic that you sketch would be really positive, and we'd be buyers of markets, of bonds, not so much listed property just yet, although our illustrious property team do think there's exceptional value there. And keep in mind, we need to keep the rest of the world in our thinking. But again, the framework that you're using, global macro, global growth, etc., improves as rates fall. So that should be really fertile for South African investors post this. Certainly over the last 12 months, it feels damn sight difficult right now.
Thanks, Marius. Thanks for those insights. Certainly very useful from my perspective. It gives people an idea of how some of the macroeconomic factors are taken into account when it comes to investment portfolios. And right now, there is a plethora of economic data and events that seem to be having a direct impact on financial market performance.